We're holding Parashat Vayera, part 3 tonight. What we had seen is God appeared to Avram after his brit milah. Avram was told by the angels that his Sarah would have a child a year from now, a year from when that took place. And that took place, we said, according to one understanding, on Pesach, and Yitzchak was born the following year, Pesach. Another understanding is that that took place on Rosh Hashanah, on Sukkot, and the coming Pesach, Sarah had Yitzchak. After that story, the people went to Sodom to destroy it, the angels, and they saved Lot. And then we had the whole story of Lot and his daughters in the caves. And that's where we left off. So Lot and his daughters, they have children, Ammon and Moab. And now Avram travels, he leaves them, he's pretty embarrassed by the whole story. People are talking about Lot, and Avram wants to distance himself from Lot. As much as before Avram had told him, "I'll be there for you," now Avram travels. And they come to the city of Gerar, a Philistine city. Avram tells them, "Sarah is my sister." And we discussed last week certain understandings as to what happened here halachically when Avram said she was his sister. The question is, firstly, what was Sarah doing all this time? Secondly, what about causing other people to sin? He's saying that she's his sister. So some say that he didn't say she was a woman who was not married. He said, "She's my sister, and she's married to a guy out in Haran," meaning that you don't have to kill me, she's not my wife. But she is a married woman. He wasn't saying she was free to the market. But the simple understanding is that he didn't say anything other than that she was his sister. And Avimelech, the king of Gerar, takes Sarah. So over here we have to ask ourselves, you have a woman who's 90 years old. What does he want her for? So the Ramban asks this. The holy Ramban asks, what's going on here? She's 90 years old. So the Ramban says, it's an amazing phenomenon that she was so good looking at such an old age. He says it's possible that part of the miracle that made her able to get pregnant again, that gave her her youth, also gave her her good looks of her youth. He says it's possible, if God made her young again, so to speak, so she could have children, that God also made her so good looking. But the Ramban marvels. He said, what's going on here? He says, we could understand, let's say when Paro took her, she was only 65. So, okay, let's say that at 65 she still had some looks. But at 90, when she herself says, I'm all shriveled, I've got nothing left over, I'm an old hag, so what's the attraction? So Avimelech nonetheless is attracted, and he takes Sarah. And God appears to Avimelech in a dream, and he tells him, you're going to die. You took a woman who's a married woman. Now Avimelech never came close to her. One understanding is that God made him ill, as we'll see, that God closed their apertures. They couldn't go to the bathroom, they couldn't have kids, they couldn't be with their wives, so Avimelech couldn't. Another understanding is that God made him lose all urge. He didn't want to. At any rate, God had a hand in it, and Avimelech didn't really come close to her. And Avimelech turns to God and he says, what, do you kill a person even when he's righteous? One understanding is that Avimelech said, oh yeah, I'm going to die, now I understand. If I deserve to die for this, then I'm going to tell the whole world that you killed the people of the Mabul for nothing, they weren't so bad, and the people of the generation of the Tower of Babel for nothing, because I'm not so bad. What did I do so wrong? If I deserve to die, then okay, maybe they also died and they weren't so bad. So God tells him, Avimelech makes his claim. He says, the man told me she was his sister. She said he was her brother. I didn't trust my servants. I checked out with all their cattle drivers and all their workers. Everyone said she was his sister. What did I do wrong? I was innocent when I took her. And God answers him in the dream. He says, I know you did this thinking you were innocent, and therefore I held you back from sinning before me. That's why I didn't let you touch her. But now give her back. Now our sages say that Avimelech held himself I'm okay. I didn't do anything wrong. God saw it differently. God said, it's true you're king. But what right do you have to take a woman against her own will? Let's say she wasn't a married woman. How could you say you're so righteous? Did you ask her if she wants to be married to you? So you're the king, so you take any woman you want? Avimelech took it for granted that he could do what he wants as long as she's not married. So a woman is material. You buy her. A woman once told me that when she was engaged to her husband, they were traveling, and they hopped into an Arab village. This was before the Intifada. And there was a young Arab sheikh there. So he asked her fiancé, he said, I'll give you 7 camels for her. Meaning in his mind, it was clear that this man owns her. And if he wants, I'll give her. And it's not that she owns, she has no say in the matter. I was happy to see that she was still married to him. I guess he didn't want the 7 camels. I guess.
Similar situation. Nuri's book Exodus, where Nekiti and Ari are visiting some kind of sheikh or Bedouin. I don't remember exactly the situation, but also a Muslim guy, and he also wants to buy the kitty for let's say 10 camels. And afterwards, then he is translating what happened in the tent, and she's asking him, what did you say? And I said, are you crazy? Don't you see that she is at least 20 worth?
So we see here, again, when the Torah tells us stories of our forefathers, so we brought last week the concept of Maaseh Avot Siman Lebanim. What happens to our forefathers is a sign for us. But there's also the understanding that we're supposed to learn good traits from here. God is rebuking Avimelech. Avimelech is saying, what did I do wrong? And God's saying, what do you mean? She's not an object. She has a say in the matter. You don't just take her just because you're a king. Was Avimelech righteous or not? What went on here? So here there are a few understandings. Rashi doesn't... I don't see so many clues in Rashi as to what Rashi sees. But I think we do have one clue. Rashi says that Avimelech said, I asked everyone. I asked the servants. I asked the cattle drivers. Everyone said that she's his sister. So I always thought that Rashi was cluing us in to the fact that Avimelech was a liar. Because what's Avimelech saying? I'm innocent. I asked everyone. Well, if you're really so innocent, why'd you ask everyone? If you really thought she was your brother, you know, sometimes people do this. They ask, is this okay? Is this okay? You ask a few people, they all like give you a mediocre answer, and they say, I asked. Person sometimes says, there's a hechsher. People do that sometimes. They say there's something wrong, and there's some hanky-panky going on. They say, yeah, but it says it's kosher. What does that mean? If all the person is looking for is to have an excuse, so then he could say, I asked him, he said it's okay. People sometimes, they buy his food in the store, and they say, I asked the owner, he said it's kosher. So what went on here? Avimelech took her, and he says, but I asked everyone. Well, why'd you ask everyone? Obviously, you felt maybe something was wrong, so it doesn't say this anywhere. I didn't see anyone that says that. That's my understanding in Rashi. That Avimelech, with all his claims, gave away that really there was room to be suspicious that something wrong was going on. Yeah. But I don't know. It doesn't say clearly in Rashi. At least I don't see it clearly. The Ramban says that Avimelech was a good person, as were his men. The Philistine people were all good people. And Avram was suspicious of them because of what had happened wherever he traveled. And wherever Avram went, Avram always had this deal. We don't admit that she's my wife, we always say she's my sister. By the way, I thought of something, which is a little funny, but there might be truth to it. Let's say Sarah wasn't so good looking. Imagine Avram and Sarah are married when she's 20. And when they go around, Avram tells her, you know what, we have to worry with your looks. We have to always say you're my sister, otherwise they'll kill me for you. Now imagine Sarah turns 45, and Avram gives a look, and he sees it's not such a problem anymore. What's he going to do? He's going to tell Sarah, you know what, it's not a problem anymore? He can't exactly say that. It's my own chat. you can't do that. The Ramban says that Avimelech was a good person, as were his men. And Avram was suspicious wherever he went. He was worried. So Avram set them up. Avram said, she's my sister. It seems like the Ramban is learning that he didn't say she's a married woman. Other Mefarshim say he said she's my sister and she's married to someone else. She's traveling with me now. But the Ramban seems to go with that Avram really set them up. He didn't mean to, but he, by saying that, by telling everyone she's my sister, he made sure no one asked. He kept saying she's my sister. By doing that, he set up the problem. So
again, you know, no, just because she's, even if she's not married, that still doesn't get, you said it's giving an encouragement to take her.
So that other Mefarshim say, it's not the Ramban. Other Mefarshim say
that's true. I don't care if the Ramban says it's not, it's still true.
Well, I was wondering about that. Being that I only saw that, I don't remember if the Chizkuni or the Rashbam, one of the other Mefarshim say that was God's claim against him. Or the Radak, I think, says that. I think it's the Radak that says, Rav David Kimchi, says that's what God was saying. Fine, so she's not married. Who gave you a right to take her? But it's interesting, the Radak, throughout Bereishis, we're going to see, has a very, you could call it a very modern philosophy, if you want to call it that. The Radak has radical thoughts on the parasha. Now, I'm not trying to belittle the Radak. The Radak is someone way above me. The Beis Yosef quotes him in the Radak. Who am I to say anything about the Radak? I don't know where he was from. But it's interesting that I didn't notice anyone else saying this pshat.
I've heard it, I think.
Okay. So that's why I'm thinking that maybe the other Mefarshim were going with what was commonly accepted in those times. Meaning, if it was accepted in society that you buy a woman and that her brother could sell her, so then maybe that's not a claim against Avimelech. Maybe the Radak is telling us a lesson we're supposed to learn. But the fact that I didn't see anyone else saying that pshat indicates to me that maybe it wasn't so bad. Maybe there was coercion here. The king says, will you marry me? What are you going to say? You tell the king no. So maybe it was an aspect that it's held against Avimelech that he should have understood that Sarah couldn't exactly say no. But maybe maybe there really was no said. I don't know. Maybe there was a question. I don't know. Or maybe there wasn't a need for a question. I'm not sure. That's what I'm saying. That it's an interesting pshat. It's an interesting message we're supposed to learn from it. But I'm not sure what we're supposed to derive from the fact that the other Mefarshim don't point that out.
Well, let's say that it was customary for a person to buy the woman from the man and not... And, you know, like they didn't have respect, so they just bought her. So then they still should have come down and say, how much she's selling her for? 10 camels, 20 camels, 1,000 camels? I don't know, like I said, 500 million camels, and no one would have taken her. So somewhere along the way, somebody would have had to do something other. I mean,
we could say otherwise.
Because suppose also if the custom was you just take a woman, you just snatch her, put her in a burlap bag, and carry her off over the mountains. If that was the custom, well, then I don't think they have any claim of innocence anyway.
Well, the Rambam says that before the Torah was given, a man and a woman would meet in the market, and if he wanted and she wanted, then they would marry. The Rambam does seem to say that she has a say in the matter. What I'm saying is that could be when she's with her brother, that it was accepted that they do the dealings with him. I don't know.
But obviously they didn't do dealings with Abraham if they took her, because Abraham would have set the price so high that they couldn't take her.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he knew he was risking his life by saying that.
He was a usurer.
I don't know.
What if he said this? She's my sister. Or, you know, like maybe he could say like he's my sister. Like my parents or something said that the minimum price will pay. I don't know.
He's an old man. My parents said.
So
he's 100 years old. Okay, let's continue. So
she's a princess, and we have a family custom. We only take 500 camels.
So God tells Avimelech in a dream, give her back, for the man is a Navi, he will pray for you and you will live. If you don't give her back, you'll die. So we have to ask ourselves, in general, we will encounter a few times through operations that God speaks to Gentiles. What's going on here? So it's true, you could have a non-Jew who is a prophet, as we will see in the Torah. But here, there are a few understandings. Bilam was a non-Jew, he had prophecy. Here we have a few understandings. One understanding says that this wasn't prophecy. This was a dream. And in a dream, God sometimes gives truthful dreams to people where they recognize that they're seeing truths. So that's a lower level. The person doesn't have to be a prophet in order to get that. Another understanding is that for Avram's sake, God gave him prophecy. In honor of tzaddikim, sometimes God appears to people who are not worthy of it. So Avimelech is told, you will die. We see that he doesn't get warning. Seems that in ancient times, before the Torah was given, a ben Noach did not need to have warning. The warning is, you should know to do better. You should know. You don't have to have warning. The Torah says a Jew needs warning, but a ben Noach not. Avimelech gives her back, and now he has to persuade Avram, so he sits down with Avram for a little talk. He says, what did I do to you that you did this to me? You did things that are unacceptable with me. No answer. So Avimelech tells Avram, why'd you do this? Avimelech said, I was scared. There's no God-fearingness in this town. I walk into town, first thing they do, they ask me, is she married or not? That's the first thing you do. A guy walks into town, you don't ask him, do you have what to eat? Do you have what to drink? You ask me about the woman. So I was scared. I said, if these people aren't God-fearing, they might kill me for her. So the truth is that we are related in a sisterly fashion. She is my niece. So she's married to me, and our deal is that wherever we go, she says she's my sister. Avimelech gives him a lot of gifts, and he says you could settle wherever you want. And he tries to be very nice to Avram. He's hoping Avram will pray for him, and Avram does. And he tells Sarah, look, I gave your brother a lot of money, a lot of wealth. I hope it'll cover your eyes, so to speak. It'll cover up for the fact that I took you, I saw you, I had you like a wife. And I hope you'll forgive me. So Avram prays for Avimelech, and God heals him, and his wife and the women of his household can have kids. Our sages say that when Avimelech told her this should be a covering for your eyes, that's there's like a built-in curse. Your eyes should get covered up. And our sages say that we derive from here that kililat idiot, the curse of even a layman, Avimelech wasn't a great pious person, even his curse came true. And because he said these words to her, her son, Yitzchak, became blind when he became older. So our sages say, be careful, don't curse and don't get cursed. A person has to be careful what he says. And this includes even saying something like, if this would happen. That's also considered a curse. The Gemara records that one of the Amorim once said to the other one, if this would happen to you, and shortly thereafter it happened. So the Gemara says even statements like that, a person should be careful not to say. Yeah?
Also, the thing, you know, regarding taking a woman against her will, you say, hey, so like, well, very few people bring it here. Well, what about the people who bring it regarding the Nephilim, when it says that, you know, like the like, you know, some interpret that whole thing as like rulers would take the women against the males.
Right. That's true. That's
so anyone
point.
Who brings it over there, couldn't you say that they probably would have? They probably, you know.
It's a very good point. Yeah, it's a good point. I didn't think of that. Yeah. After Avram prays for them, so as we mentioned yesterday, God says, if you pray for someone else and you need that thing, I'll give it to you first and then I'll give it to them. So Avram is praying for them to be able to have kids. So Avram, his wife, gets pregnant. God, on Rosh Hashanah, we say, God remembered Sarah. Rosh Hashanah is the time when God remembers the women who want kids, and God chose to have this time that Sarah would have children to become pregnant. And Sarah has a child on the set date on Pesach when God had foretold Avram she would have a child. And they named the child Yitzchak, which needs definition. Yitzchak is in the future sense, will left. And we're going to see that Yitzchak, his whole life seems to represent being fearful, not laughing. Maybe that's why it's in the future. Will left. His whole life will left. And Yitzchak gets a bris milah at 8 days old. Avram's 100 years old. And Sarah says, who would believe that Avram had a child at this age, that his wife Sarah is nursing kids? Our sages say people were talking. People were joking. They were saying, could this be from Avram? All the years Avram was with Sarah, they didn't have a kid. Now she's with Avimelech. One night she gets pregnant. So that's a pretty nasty thing to say. Firstly, you see a miracle. A 90-year-old woman has a child. So that's a miracle. So you're saying, yeah, it happened when she was with Avimelech. It's a little bit ridiculous. But when you want to make a joke, you make a joke. You see that Avram could have kids. He had a child with Hagar. So there was no validity for this statement. But when a person wants to make a joke and you want to mock a miracle, so then you don't need validity. That's the strength of leitzanut. The strength of being able to mock something is that it doesn't have to have validity. You could just sometimes give a look of scorn. You give a look and you've mocked something. You don't have to be valid in your mocking. You know, they used to call President Reagan the Teflon president, because nothing stuck to him. He'd always try to give a lot of dirt and nothing stuck. How did he do it? He'd have an opponent in Congress speaking against him or a certain committee. They're investigating him, and then they'd be giving a long speech about how he did something wrong. Reagan wouldn't say a word. He just looked thoughtfully down and shake his head. And the cameras would automatically focus on him, and they'd show him shaking his head, and it would seem like he's saying, no, this is wrong. He didn't have to say a word. He was an actor. He'd just give that look, shake his head, and people were convinced with what he said more than the other guy's whole speech. He didn't say anything. Sometimes with a look, you could do more. As we discussed in the laws of Kibud Av V'Aim, that the Torah says, Ahul makla avivim, oh, cursed is the one who disgraces his father, and Halacha in Shulchan Aruch is that if a person just gives a look of scoff, of scorn, that causes a certain scorn upon his parents, so that's a biblical prohibition. There's a curse on that. Not only does a person have to honor his parents, he can't cause them any scorn. So over here, people wanted to make fun. And to make fun, you don't have to have validity. You want to make fun, you can make fun. So, Leitzanei Ador were saying, it's not true. Leitzanei Ador, the jokers were saying, you think it's her kid? They grabbed the kid, they bought a kid from the market, and they said, they're saying, that's her kid. You think Sarah could really be nursing him? You think at 90 years old she's having a child? So, the Medrash says that when they made a party, so everyone gathered. And here there are different versions to the Medrash. One version says that God made it that the women suddenly didn't have milk to nurse their kids, or they forgot their wet nurses at home. Another version of the Medrash says that the women purposely didn't bring their wet nurses, and they came and they said, Sarah, my poor baby's crying, I don't have a wet nurse here, could you nurse him for me? So the Medrash says that Avram told Sarah, this isn't the time for modesty. Go sit in the public square, all these women are having problems nursing their babies, and start nursing the kids. And Sarah became the public wet nurse. She sat there, she had a booth, and people would just bring their kids and she'd nurse one after the other. So that's why the pasuk says, Hinika vanim Sarah. Sarah nursed many babies. And the Medrash says that all these kids that nursed from Avram, they became either gerim, their neshamas in the future became gerim, they are the gerim that we have today, or they became chasidei umot ha'olam. They became the righteous people who are not Jewish. The Medrash says that those neshamas gained from the fact that they nursed from Sarah. This is in the Psikta Rav Kahana. So Avram makes a big party on the day that Yitzhak stopped nursing, and on this day everyone wants to test her. So that's when this whole story took place. He's making a party like he stopped nursing. Let's see if she ever did nurse. And on that day he's making this party, and Sarah sees the son of Hagar the Mitzris that she bore Avram making fun. That's a pretty long way of saying Yishmael. Could have just said she saw Yishmael making fun. Doesn't say that. It says the son of Hagar, who is Mitzris, that bore Avraham, she saw him making fun. And here our sages say, what was he doing wrong? So they look at this pasuk and they derive from the words, either he didn't recognize that he was the son of Hagar, he didn't recognize that there was a difference between him and Yitzchak, so he was making fun. He said, what's this big party for Yitzchak? I stopped nursing, no one made a party for me. He started talking like, what's the difference? One understanding says that he started mocking Yitzchak. Started saying, I come from Hagar, but him, I come from Avram. That's why the pasuk stresses that Hagar bore Avram. But him, he came after she spent the night with Avimelech. She heard Yishmael making fun of Yitzchak and saying, he doesn't deserve to inherit my father. I'm the true son. What's he? So Sarah recognized that, where did Yishmael get this from? He got this from Hagar. The Gemara says, you hear a kid talking in the marketplace, you know that whatever he's saying is what he heard at home. He heard it from his parents. Well, he didn't hear this from Avram, so obviously he heard it from Hagar. And Sarah recognized that Yishmael is setting the stage to inherit Avram. He wants to kick Yitzchak out. He's already starting to say that Yitzchak isn't really Avram's son. That's another understanding. There's an understanding that says that she saw Yishmael jealous of Yitzchak. So she saw that when he was practicing shooting bow and arrow, he shot a few arrows in Yitzchak's direction. And his mother obviously wasn't doing anything to stop him. So she saw Mitzachet is used as a term for murder. She saw that he was preparing, sharpening the knife to take care of Yitzchak. Another understanding says that she saw him starting to go for Avodah Zarah. The term Mitzachek is sometimes used for Avodah Zarah. So there are many understandings as to what really went, what happened here. Like why is it that Sarah said he must go, to quote Kahana. So the Ramban gives the most innocent explanation. The Ramban says that he was joking. He was saying, oh, why are they making such a party? They didn't make a party for me. And in saying that, what he was saying is, I'm Avram's firstborn son. I'm his main inheritor. Why didn't I get a party like this? Why is Yitzchak getting a party like this? At any rate, she tells Avram, chase away this maid, chase away your son, because this kid is not inheriting together with my son, with Yitzchak. And Avram felt very bad about his son. Now obviously he also felt bad about his wife. I mean, Hagar was his wife. But he felt even more bad about his son. And God told Avram, don't feel bad about the kid or your maid. Do whatever Sarah tells you. Because Yitzchak is the one that's going to be called your offspring. Now this is very difficult. God sees that Avram is having a hard time. So he tells him, don't worry. This kid is going to be successful. I will make him into a nation. Because he's your son. So Avram gets up early in the morning, the way Avram does. And he takes bread, and he takes a flask of water, and he gives it to Hagar. And he sends her, and he gives her enough to make it to Be'er Sheva. But she gets lost on the way. So she runs out of water and bread. There's a medrash here that God said, you give everyone food. You don't give your wife food. You give everyone as much as you can. When she leaves you, you give her nothing more than this. But our sages say that Avram wanted to give her more. As we will see that after Sarah passes on, Avram gives gifts to Ishmael. But when Sarah was around, Sarah was looking over his shoulder and Sarah said, no, you're giving her bread and water and you're sending her on her way. And Avram ordinarily wouldn't do this to Hagar. But God told him, whatever Sarah says, listen to her. So Avram was stuck. God said, listen to her. So he has to listen to her. And she's saying, you give her bread, you give her water, and you send her on her way with the kid.
Why is Sarah like this?
Why is Sarah like this? So we're gonna work on two levels. One understanding, which one will you remember more? The first or the second?
The second.
Okay, so I'll start with because there's one that we'll start with the one. We'll start with the one that's less important. You should remember, and that is the Radak. We said that the Radak gives us certain philosophies in the Parsha, but he's very unique. And the Radak says that Sarah erred twice. She erred when she told Avram that she's upset at Hagar. Hagar got pregnant. She started treating Sarah disrespectfully. She started saying, now that I'm going to have the kid, I'm the mistress, you're going to be my mate. And then Sarah got upset, and Avram saw that she's getting upset. He said, what can I do? I'm telling her to treat you respectfully. She's not listening. And Avram said, okay, do what you want with her. And then Sarah started afflicting her, and Hagar ran away. What happens when Hagar runs away? Amalek shows up to Hagar and says, Ki shama Hashem etonyech, God heard your affliction. Says the Radak, God was saying, you were afflicted unjustly. You'll be blessed for that.
I thought he said God heard his affliction.
We're going back to last week's parasha. In last week's parasha, when Hagar first got pregnant, Avram told Sarah, you could do what you want with her. Says the Radak, Sarah should have been extra kind. It's true, Hagar was wrong. Hagar shouldn't have been behaving that way. But Sarah went as far as she could in afflicting Hagar, and therefore Hagar ran away. And what happened? In turn, Hagar got this blessing. The Malach shows up and tells her the child will be blessed. Now this is a revolutionary pshat. This is the Radak. Says the Radak in our parasha as well, that Sarah did what Avram thought should not be done, and Avram didn't hold her back because of Shalom Bais. In both parashios, the Radak says Shalom Bayis came first. And here we see that for Shalom Bayis, a person has to be willing to suffer things that he thinks, that's not just. This isn't the way it should be. He wouldn't have gone as far as sending the child away and sending Hagar away for Shalom Bayis the way he did. Certainly not without more than bread and water. But God told him, listen to her. So this is the Radak. But we have to understand the different pshat. And this is the more important pshat that you know. Because this is the one that's generally known. The Radak is revolutionary. You'll quote it at a Shabbos day. We have to make sure to say it's the Radak. Because otherwise people will get very upset at you. They'll think you're learning at some kind of modern place. People don't know this pshat. No, that's why I said it's the less important pshat you should know. Because it's not well known. It's not what's the accepted pshat. Let's say that way. It is a pshat, but it's not the accepted pshat. The problem with it, the good thing about it is that it teaches us a lesson, and it's an important lesson. The problem with it, and I'm not one to say there's a problem with the Radak's pshat, but I'm saying the reason why I wouldn't stress this pshat is because when we speak about Sarah, we have to recognize we're talking about Sarah Imenu, the matriarch. We're talking about someone who's on a much higher level than we are. And even the Radak, who says that what Sarah did was improper, is saying this is a lesson we should learn from this story. But at the end of the day, Sarah is on such a high level that God tells Avram, she has better prophecy than you. Listen to her. She knows what she's talking about. So when we hear the Radak's pshat, inevitably we start thinking, oh, Sarah was a jealous wife. Sarah was a cruel, jealous stepmother, second mother. We can't do that. We're talking about Sarah. And the Radak isn't coming to belittle Sarah. At the end of the day, we're still talking about the woman who was chosen to be the mother of all humanity. By the same token that Avram is considered the father of humanity, the father of being a good person, so too Sarah is his wife. She's his partner in that. So when we read such a pshat in the Radak, we automatically get carried away with, oh, we can see the human tendencies of Sarah. And we forget the great godly qualities of Sarah. And we forget that at the end of the day, God told Avram, listen to her. So Sarah was right. So what's going on here? So we have to know that there's a division in powers when it comes to a home. Rabbi Akiva Tetz has a beautiful class on this on the web about male tendencies and female tendencies when it comes to the service of Hashem. And in a nutshell, he has a long, beautiful class on it, but in a nutshell, what he says is that the man has a tendency to throw out seeds. Just like a man at one shot could emit millions of seeds, so too he says that's a reflection of the human tendency of the male. To throw out seeds. That's a human tendency. A man always wants to start, initiate new creation. That's a tendency of a man. But a man will not nurture his creation 9 months. For that it takes a woman. A man is very good at starting. Men have excellent ideas, and you always find men always tell their wives, I'll fix this, I'll build that, and they start. And they don't finish. Because that's the human tendency. The male tendency is to start, to initiate, to create. But not to nurture, not to follow through. That's a female tendency. Now that's a shortcoming that males have. That's why males very often overextend themselves or assume they could do more than they can. Why are men very often late? Because they assume they could do this and they could do that and they'll just do this and they'll just do that and they'll get it all in. Because men really want to do a lot of things. And in their minds, they don't see the practical aspects that you have to actually take time to do one thing and the next, etc. The women, they can only handle one seed at a time. A woman gives one egg at a time, a normal woman, one egg a month. But she could nurture that egg for 9 months. And without a woman, you don't have a baby. A man, he could have 100 wives. He could have 100 kids in a year. A woman could have one. But without a woman, men wouldn't have any kids because man doesn't have that potential for nurturing. Well, a woman, she's responsible for the home. The man has to help. He has to help with the decisions and help with the running of the home. But bottom line, the home is the woman's domain. When the angels ask, where is Sarah? What does Avram say? She is in the tent. And we say, when Yael in Shoftim is blessed, she is blessed, Minashim ba'ohel tevorach. She should be most blessed among the women of the tent. That is how we refer to the imahot. The matriarchs are called the women of the tent. And here, when we say the women of the tent, we mean not only that they were modest women, they were in the tent, but also figuratively, they were the ones responsible for the tent of the Jewish people. The fathers always wanted to overextend. Avram wanted to include Yishmael to be the chosen offspring. Even when he speaks to God, he says, "Let's have Yishmael too." And God says, No. Yitzchak's the one. Yishmael, he'll be blessed, but he's not part of the tent. He's not part of the Jewish people. Yitzchak, he wants to include Esav into the picture. He wants to overextend the tent. He wants Esav as well. And Rivka, she sees the right picture. She says, no, the tent is with Yaakov. The mother's job was always to guard the tent, to ensure what goes in, what goes out. Avram, he makes four openings to the tent. He wants to expand, he wants to teach the world. That's his job. But he also needs the smart wife Sarah, who says there's a limit. The tent reaches this far. And this does not come into the tent. We do not have a son who's going for idol worship, for murder. That is not part of the Jewish tent. Sarah performs her job. Sarah ensures that the Jewish people is limited to Yitzchak, and that Yitzchak does not have to contend with Yishmael in the tent. She says, you want to build a good Jewish home, you need to have a good Jewish home. Yeah. Oh, good question. Excellent question. Okay, so let's has that just by one?
Yes, but like I heard that like the word for toch, the root tochah is also the same root for like tochah, to prove. Like you want to show the person the right way. You don't just say, you know, get out of here, if you're wrong, you're doing the things wrong. You want to show them the right way, the thing, and so they get them on the right path by simply sending a garish out. How is that accomplishing?
Okay, so let's get the broader picture. First of all, he gave them enough food and water to make it to Be'er Sheva, where in Be'er Sheva they were taken care of. They got lost on the way. That was a problem. That was one opinion, right? but the other opinions don't discuss how much he gave them. Secondly, how old is Yishmael in this story? Yishmael is 16, 17. When we're going to learn about Esav and Yaakov, we're going to learn the Yigdelu Anarim. The kids grew up, and then you could recognize which path each one's going on. There's only so much that a parent can do. Sometimes a parent sees that a kid's gone off the path, and he's gone way off the path, and there's nothing he can do. Tochacha is not what's going to do it now. Sometimes a parent sees this is the kid, this is the path he's choosing for life. And undoubtedly Avram tried to teach Yishmael the right way. Before the story, Avram was trying and he was teaching him, and Yishmael grew in his home. And I'll tell you more than that. You know what? Let's develop it to the extreme. We'll develop the thought, and then in a few minutes we'll balance it out a little bit. Okay? So instead of dancing on all weddings at one time, let's first develop the thought, and in a few minutes, I'm just saying we will quantify what we're saying now. But for now, let's just go with the train of thought. Avram sees that in spite of all his hard work, his labor, his trying to teach Yishmael well, Yishmael is starting to go for idol worship. This is the path he's choosing for life. Or according to the other understanding, he's going for murder. And he is trying to affect Yitzchak. And he is not willing to learn a different route. This is the way he wants to go. And his mother is backing him in this way. So Avram, from his own perspective, might have done things a little differently. But he has a wife who sees deeper than he sees. And his wife says, we have to get them out of the house. This cannot go. Now, if a person sees that his son is... he's a gambler, and he wants to help that son. So he could tell the kid, I'll give you an allowance. I'll give you $10,000 a month and take care of yourself. Or he could tell the kid, I'm giving you what you need. I'm not giving you extra money. I'm giving you bread. I'm giving you water. I'm going to get you as far as a place where you're going to have more bread and water. But I'm not giving you more money when I see what you're spending your money on. Might be better off if he does that. Abram sees that Yitzhak is using what he has, whatever material stuff he has, he's using for bed. He's using it to buy idols, or he's using it to buy weapons. Abram says, I don't want this. I don't want to strengthen this. And what I'm saying is not my own opinion. The Midrash says that when he saw that his son went out to a bad path, he said, I don't want to give him more than bread and water. If this is what he's using the material things for, so I don't want him to have the potential for that. Bread and water he needs, I'll give him that. Right. That wasn't the Midrash. That was the Radak. The Radak says that understanding. Fine. No, but it's true there are different opinions in the Midrashim. There is a Midrash which says Avram erred. Avram should have given him more. There's also a Midrash which says that Avram didn't want to give him more once he saw that his son went Yatzal et Tabut Ra'ah. He started going in an improper way. Okay. In a few minutes, we will modify that. But for now, let's stay with that understanding. Yeah?
You're talking about a time when women didn't have the means to support themselves financially.
But Yishmael could, as he did.
17 years old?
For sure. What, at 13? Go back 100 years. At 13 years old, kids were self-sufficient. In the time of the Gemara, still, people were getting married at 13. For sure, 17 is an adult. The question is the other way. Why is he still with his mother? Why isn't he married yet? The question isn't why. For sure, he's self-sufficient at 16, 17. Yeah. We see, Esav was a big-time hunter at 16.
He's still with his mother. Maybe he's not.
Okay.
The mother would have looked like
so...
he was a hunter, no?
It says he carried a bow and arrow, which seemed to indicate that Yishmael was a hunter.
Okay.
So Hagar gets lost, and the water, they finish the water in the flask, and she places the child under one of the bushes. Now he's suddenly called a child, 16 years old, so we have to define the word yelet. And he's about to die of thirst. He's ill. He's burning up. They're in the middle of a hot desert, lost, and she sits at a distance and she says, I could see him from here, but I don't want to see him too close. I don't want to see him die. And she starts crying. And up in heavens, there's a ruckus. God says, let's send down an angel to show them that there's water right there to drink. And the other angels, they say, God, we know the future. We know that when the Jews are going to be exiled at the destruction of the first temple, so they'll ask their captors, they'll tell them, please pass us by the Arab villages, pass us by our cousins, the Ishmaelim, they're our relatives, they'll help us out, we're traveling here in the desert, we have no food, we have no water, we're traveling on our way out of Israel. And their captors say, fine. And as they come near Masaba Arav, the prophet says in Isaiah, he lifts his vision to a prophecy about the Jews traveling Barav near their cousins, the Yishmaelim. And the Yishmaelim come and greet them with salty fish, salty meat. And they say, but we're thirsty. And they say, here we have flasks. And on the flasks they have painted water. And inside the flasks they have this old pungent air which damages a person so badly when they inhale it that the Jews first, they fall for the ploy, they first eat all those salty foods and then they beg them, please give us the drink. And they give them the flasks and they put the flasks in their mouths and they try to drink, and when that air enters their stomachs, they die. So the angels in heaven say, his grandchildren, his great-great-grandchildren, what are they going to do? They're going to make your grandchildren, they're going to make Yitzchak's offspring thirsty and purposely cause them to die of thirst. One understanding says when they recognized that they were tricked and they were so thirsty, this salty food made them die. That it wasn't the air inside the flasks. There are different places where Rashi quotes the Medrash, and it's quoted in a few places each time a little bit differently. But the basic idea is the same.
Is the salty fish smelly air thing a Medrash?
It's a Medrash on the Pasuk in Yeshaya, Masab Barat. It's a Medrash here in Bereshis. Mm-hmm. It's a Medrash over there, and it's in a few places. Mm-hmm. So the angels in heaven said, "Don't. Why save him? You're saving him with water when he's going to destroy your kids with thirst." And the pasuk says, "Vayishma Elokim, God who does judgment, heard et kol ha-na'ar, the voice of the lad." And he called an angel, and the angel said, "Ki shama Elokim et el kol ha-na'ar ba'asher husham." God has heard the voice of the lad, the way he is there. Our sages say, what does it mean by "asher husham," the way he is there? That God turned back to the angels and said, right now, is he just or is he not? And the angels had to admit, right now he is just. So what do we do with everything we just read? We thought that he's serving idols. We thought that he's a murderer. So how could the same Midrash tell us that God says he deserves to be saved? God listened to his voice the way he is there. That's why I said we're going to modify what we said. So we have to say that I didn't see this written inside, but I think that what we have to say is that when the Midrash tells us that Sarah saw these things in Yishmael, she didn't see, the Midrash stresses, she didn't see that he killed Yitzchak. She saw him starting to shoot arrows in the direction of Yitzchak. Avram recognized Yatzah le'tarbut ra'ah, that Yishmael was headed that way. That's where he was headed. And as much as Avram tried, he couldn't get him back. But Yishmael hadn't gotten there yet. Yishmael was on the path. Yishmael was on his way to become a murderer. Yishmael was on his way to become a thief. And Avram saw that. And Sarah saw that more clearly than Avram, and before Avram saw that. Avram didn't see it until Sarah pointed it out to him. And when the roots were there, they were smart enough to recognize that this is where he's headed. And God agreed that this is where he's headed, and history proved this was where he was headed. But it wasn't that at that instant he was as evil as we described it initially. It was that that's where it was headed. That's what I think we have to say. And that's why initially Avram wasn't going to do it. And Sarah said, yes, you have to do it. And God said, listen to her, she's right. She sees better than you. She sees where it's headed. So that's the insight of a woman, that she saw it. She's the great educator in the home. Yeah?
Why does it say for the order that she goes to the far away from this, or from the center, she starts crying? She doesn't want to see him, so she's the one. And then when God responds, he's talking about his son.
Very good. Excellent question. So our sages say,
that I heard his cry.
Right, our sages say, God said, I heard his cry. That God was, that from here we derive yafet filat achole, that as much as other people pray for someone, the person when he prays for himself, that has even more weight. And God says, you prayed, yeah, but he, God heard his voice. And here the Mepharshim say that really someone else would be doing this, they wouldn't necessarily have this miracle. But Hagar, she was Avram's ex-wife. Yishmael was Avram's son, so in Avram's merit they got this malach show up and show them where there was water. Yeah?
Clayton made a comparison between Yishmael and the green sword. And the reason that one person is saved and that the other person is not, he said much better, of course, but that what's Yishmael's name? So he listens to Yishmael, Shomea, he listens to Yahweh. What's when the parents take the ben sora to the priest and they said he's not listening to me. That's the connection. That's why one is saved and the other one is not.
Very nice. Very nice. It's interesting. If you look at the way Yishmael has nekudot, you'll notice that the nekudot we would expect would be a chirik under the yod, it would be yi, and then a patach under the mem, yishma, and then a tzere under the aleph,
eil.
Yishmael, to go back to the end of Lech Lecha. And the Lech Lecha,
the last, second to last, the Yishmael Beno.
Yeah, there. And you'll notice that the way the Nekudot are written, it's not Yishma'el, the Tzera is not under El, it's Yishma'el The tzera is under the ayin. The aleph is swallowed. You with me? Meaning, if it were Yishma El, will listen, God, look at the second to last pasuk in Parshas Lech Lecha, then the tzere, the verb that makes it like a EI, should be under the aleph. It would be Yishma and then El. Whereas the way the Nekudos are written, the tzere is under the ayin. So it's Yishma El, with the tzere under the ayin and the aleph is swallowed. There are also midrashim that say it's called Yishmael, which indicates that God will hear the Jewish people cry when he gets power. That's Pirkei Dov Lezer, which we will see shortly. Okay, let's continue.
So what's the explanation?
What's which explanation?
Why it's under the ayin?
Whatever I say is my own. I don't like saying my own. I've said a lot of my own tonight. You could guess as much as I could guess. Whatever I say is a guess. I'm looking for someone to address it. I haven't yet seen.
I wrote the thing, but not the answer. So okay. The answer is waiting someday.
Right. That's the way you learn. You pose questions and you wait. Yesterday, I found there was a Rashi in Megillah that for 5 years I had a question on. I thought there was a certain pshat which was true, and for 5 years I couldn't find anyone that says like me. And yesterday I found Rav Yehuda Chalava, and our parsha says what I said. Arishon says. He doesn't say it on the Rashi in Megillah, but once he says it on our Parsha, so we could also say it in the Rashi in Megillah. Certain definition on what the word Navi means.
So you
keep searching. This week I learned the Gemara that for 8 years I didn't understand. I didn't have pshat in the Rashi. There's a Rashi that was in Daf Yomi in Beitza that for 8 years I didn't have pshat. And then this week I learned it again, and I learned it with the Gemara of Ozva Adar. And they pointed out that there was a misprint on one word. And after I had the correct version, that misprint corrected, I had pshat. For 8 years, I couldn't understand what Rashi was saying. So yeah, sometimes you have to wait. You never know. I got to the sugya and I told my chavrus, I said, we'll try to learn this, but I'm telling you, I've never gotten pshat on this. Okay, let's continue. So we have a question. We don't know why the tzere is under the ayin, but I raised that in response to what you said, because I think that maybe there's something to it there. Maybe there, part of the answer is connected to what you pointed out about God hearing and the fact that we don't put the tzere under it. So it doesn't really clearly say it's God, that the el part of Yishmael is not clearly God. Could be, because we know in the end of his life Yishmael did hear God. I think there's even a medrash that way. I think there is someone who says what you're saying now, that at the end of his life he heard God. I don't remember right now. I think there's a medrash that goes that way.
Why there is an opinion, a third of Yisraelim history, that the voice of the sense of Yishmael is that they have a big power for tefillah. Is that true?
I think there's a Zohar that's quoted that way, but I don't learn Zohar. You got to talk to someone else. I don't know. So Avimelech comes. Wait, so the kid gets water, they drink, and God is with the kid. He is successful, and his mother brings him a wife from the people of Mitzrayim. She goes back to her family. It seems like she goes back to her ways. If we have a chance tonight, maybe we'll expand a little bit on Hagar. There are opinions in the Gemara about whether Hagar was righteous or not. One understanding is she went back to Mitzrayim, she went back to her ways, the sinful ways of the Mitzrayim. Another understanding is that Keturah, she's later on called Keturah because Keturah is Aramaic, like Kishura, tied up, that she tied herself up to Avram. She said, I'm not marrying anyone else. She was always waiting, maybe Avram will take her back. And when Sarah passes on, so then Avram does take her back. It says Avram married a woman by the name of Keturah. Our sages say Keturah is Hagar. Really? Another understanding is that she's called Keturah, that Keturah is a nickname for Hagar,
so
because her masim, her actions were beautiful like Torah, like the special incense that we burn in honor of God. So it seems like Hagar was a righteous woman. With a tet, yeah. Isn't this also spelled with a tet?
Then
I was waiting for you to say that. Right, I don't know, but the Gemara does seem to darshan it that way. You're right. The Keturah, if it were Keshura, it doesn't seem to be that it should be with a tet. And if I'm not mistaken, it says clearly that Keturah is with a tet. But here, Keturah with a tet, Perek Chafei Pasuk Aleph. But nonetheless, that's what our sages say. Yeah.
What did it say in the Yud-Zayin that when Hashem, it describes Hashem as Malach Elokim?
Where are you?
Yud-Zayin, Vayishma Elokim,
right?
Kol Ana, Vayikra,
Malach Elokim, an angel of God called
an
out her.
Angel of God.
Right, a Malach called out her.
It's not an
angel. Okay. It's interesting, one of the things we could see from here, Laila Tov. The angel begins by telling Hagar, Malach Hagar, what's going on, Hagar? Don't be scared. God heard his voice. Take the kid, hold his hand, he's going to be a great nation. He begins by telling her, Malach Hagar, what's going on, Hagar? What are you so upset about? This is a rule in life. Things could change within a second. If we go in the way of Hashem, sometimes even if we don't go in the way of Hashem, God can make the scene change in 1 second. So the angel comes to Hagar and he tells her, what's going on? What are you so upset about? Malach Hagar. He knows she's thirsty. She's in the middle of a boiling hot desert. Her son's on the verge of dying. But he still tells her, what's going on? This is something we should learn from. So God opens her eyes.
Why are you worried? Why are you worried?
Worried? You could be worried. You're crying so much. Everything. What's the big deal? There's water right here. So sometimes the solution is under one's nose and he doesn't know it. Yeah.
He's talking about how you should be able to control your anger, and how it's able to help you focus on things. And he's saying how a lot of times when you're you can't find something, you get all angry and everything, and then it's you just calm down and check your pockets, and maybe that's where the keys are.
Okay. Yeah.
It's worked with me at least five times since I heard that. Lost my keys. It's connecting. When you're so focused on things, you can't.
We're holding Shishi. So at this time the Torah tells us Avimelech comes and he wants to make a pact with Avram. What's special about this time? Avimelech recognizes that Avram had this miracle. He had a child at such an old age. He sees how successful Avram is. He comes to Avram and he wants to make a treaty with him. And we will continue here in 2 minutes. I want to pause.